All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich, Richard Opening Bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. And you can talk and text 312-981-7200. You can also check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. Follow us there. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. I'd like to welcome to the show. My next guest is Janet Bodner. She's the editor of Kiplinger's. It's Kiplinger's magazine is celebrating its 70th year in publication. It exists to help people with their finances. And Janet is the editor, and she is also an author in her own right of a couple of books. And she is an expert in the field of children's and family finances and financial literacy. And she's here to help us out and talk about the 70th anniversary of Kiplinger's. And we welcome Janet to the show. Hello, Janet.
Hey, how are you, Nick?
All right. How are you?
Oh, fine.
All right. Tell everybody about Kiplinger's.
Well, we are a family-owned company. We were started by the Kiplinger family, yes, 70 years ago in 1947, as a way of helping people with their personal finances, which at the time was just unheard of. There were business publications at the time, but nothing that was actually helping people with their personal lives. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we started. We are still a family-owned publication by the Kiplinger family, very much an anomaly in today's media world. And our mission is still to give people plain English, straightforward advice about how to manage their finances so that they can build their own financial security.
And people can actually find the website at Kiplinger.com.
That's right. And Kiplinger.com.
We have a link on our Facebook page so people can go directly to it at facebook.com/Nick D Show. How long have you been a part of Kiplinger's?
Well, I've been at Kiplinger for more than 20 years, but I've been editor of the magazine for 9 years. I started actually in, 2009 was my first year as editor. And it's been really exciting. I've done a lot of things with Kiplinger. I've written a lot for the magazine as well as editing other folks' stories for the magazine. Plus, I've also done a lot of outside work, for example, talking to you, this sort of thing, doing a lot of media work. And I've done a couple of books, one on children and money and one on women and money, mm-hmm. both for Kiplinger. So, the Kiplinger family has been good to me as well over my career.
What about your background, Janet? How did you get yourself involved in finances? Was it something that you were interested in early on, or how did it get into your life?
No, not really. I was a journalism major, and I went to Columbia University for a master's degree in journalism, but I was kind of a generalist, and I got into writing about business and finance quite by accident because I got a job with a newspaper numbers of years ago when I just got married, actually, in New Jersey. I was working for a newspaper in New Jersey, and I was covering the financial field. And I really didn't have a lot of background or training in it, and I just found it really fascinating, in particular writing about personal finance and the economy and that sort of thing. And so I went back to Columbia on a fellowship in business and economics journalism. And after that, when I got finished with that fellowship program, it's called the Badgett Fellowship in Business and Economics Journalism, I came to Kiplinger. And I started off at Kiplinger writing their economic outlook column, which was called The Months Ahead, What to Look for in the Months Ahead. It was sort of economic forecasting and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And from there, it just took off, and I found a home there.
Now, let me ask you this. Personally, Janet, have you always been good with money? Because there are some people out there, and I know that you know this, being in the business that you're in. A lot of people out there don't have a knack for it and are just not good with finances and dealing with them. Hey, had you always had a knack for being smart with money?
No, I would not say so. And I think that that should be encouraging for other people. I think I was always careful with money because I was just never extravagant with money, but I didn't know a lot about it. I certainly didn't know a lot about investing, for example, when I was started working in the newspaper world. I had savings accounts, bank savings accounts, but I didn't know a lot about investing. And that's what, actually, frankly, working for Kiplinger taught me a lot about that. And one of the things I learned was that you don't have to be wealthy. You don't have to make a lot of money to start saving. You can start with small amounts of money. In fact, that's one of our 70 big tips for our 70th anniversary. Just small amounts of money put aside for lots of years grow into large amounts of money. It's the magic of compound interest, magic of compounding. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things I learned by working at Kiplinger that I really wasn't aware of. I had never taken an economics class when I was in college, even though I was a journalism major. So that was something that was really important. I did, when I went back to Columbia on my fellowship, I did take economics, and which was also very helpful. So that's something I would recommend to folks if they're still, you know, in the educational phase of their lives. Just learning a lot about how the economy works is very important to begin with. Mm-hmm. But if you don't know a lot about personal finance, read something like Kiplinger's. That's why we're there.
Right.
To provide advice for, you know, for everyday folks that they can learn and understand.
We'll get into some of that in a couple of minutes. I do want to talk a little bit about the 70th year of Kiplinger and your letter from the editor, which I found very interesting. Your letter from the editor, I found very interesting. What has changed and what has remained the same? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it was really fascinating when we looked through our dusty old bound volumes. And a lot. It was funny because the very first issue of the magazine, which was in 1947, one of the first stories in the magazine was that the Republicans had come back to Washington. We're based in Washington, D.C., by the way. Mm-hmm. So we had written about how the Republicans had come back to Washington because they had, you know, taken over Congress.
Oh, there you go.
Ready to get started. And we thought, oh, my gosh, it's deja vu all over again.
Right.
And some of the stories were so similar. They were stories about what kind of tax cut could we expect. And, in fact, within that very issue of the magazine, we had a story about, you know, don't overpay Uncle Sam. And in the current issue, the current April issue of the magazine, we also have a story on don't overpay Uncle Sam when you file your taxes this year. And we had stories about investing in mutual fund type investments, investment trusts, and when to sell stocks. And there was a story on the high cost of drugs. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
And, you know, phased retirement, retiring in stages back then. And now we're talking about phased retirement. So there were so many similarities. It was really very interesting. And coincidentally, a number of those subjects we were actually writing about in the April issue of the magazine. You know, the housing outlook, we were doing our annual housing outlook, and that was one of the things that we had written about back then, when to buy a house and how to buy a house. So it was just, it was amazing the number of coincidences.
Yeah, it really is pretty remarkable. But again, you know, Janet, you've been doing this for a long time. Isn't everything kind of cyclical?
Yes, I think it is. And of course, what does make a difference is that, you know, things are much more modern now. You know, obviously there are better, easier and better ways for individuals to invest and more opportunities to do so at lower cost than there were then. So things have come a long way. But one of the funniest things that we had written about, we were doing a prediction, and this was in the 1940s, and we were doing a prediction about what the car of the future would look like. And we said that there would be a TV hookup in the car of the future, and that you would be able to use a telephone in the car of the future, and there would even be room in the car for a directory for your telephone numbers, because it was very difficult to escape the telephone nowadays. And I thought that was really funny.
This was written in the 40s?
Yes, this was written in 1947. I think it was 1947 or 1948. Yes,
wow.
That's what we did.
Wow.
And isn't it something? But one of the things that we also said in that same story was that the car of the future might even have an underseat toilet, which, of course, we didn't call. But as I said in my column, Elon Musk, are you listening?
Yeah, exactly. Get Elon Musk on this right now.
Wow. Exactly.
Yeah, that's pretty great. That's really great. So in 70 years, you know, things, they really haven't changed that much.
No, they haven't. As far as, certainly as far as the things that people are concerned about, you know, they're interested in providing financial security for their family. They're interested in providing for their own retirement. They're interested in getting ahead on the job. We even included, in those days, as we do now, we included stories on health. And it must have been, we decided that we had run a number of stories back in those days on alcoholism and how to deal with alcoholism, which led us to believe that, you know, in the culture of the late 1940s and early 1950s, that was an issue. Obviously, it must have been an issue because we talked about that. We also wrote a story back in those days about falling asleep. What if you're help for insomniacs, it was called. Well, just last month in the magazine, we did a story which we called What's Keeping You Up at Night? And it was also a health-related story about, you know, folks who are having trouble sleeping and what were some of the new techniques that people could use to get a better night's sleep. So again, you know, people just, they're concerned about their health, their families, their personal security and retirement. And what changes, of course, is some of, as I mentioned earlier, the products and services. Cars are very different now than they were in 1947, and we were very prescient about some of those things. The ways that you can invest, the savings vehicles that you have access to, like IRAs and 401k plans if you're saving for retirement. So those things have changed, but the underlying concerns have remained remarkably similar.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. The whole insomniac thing, well, it's interesting because that's, you know, I have a lot of insomniacs who listen to my show, Janet, and people who have trouble sleeping. But it is universal in a lot of people who are having trouble understanding finances, who are having trouble with money, can't sleep. That's just a common thing.
It is a worry. You know, it is something that, well, it's something that people worry about. And it's also something that people, couples, spouses fight about,
yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just one of those things. And even if it's not the primary concern area of concern in their relationship, other flashpoints tend to converge on, money issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're angry with your spouse or your significant other about something else. And then it the way it manifests itself is in a big argument about, oh, you're spending too much money.
Right.
Money grows on trees, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so, we've all been there, Janet.
Right. It's a very psychological issue.
Yeah, it is. Hang on, okay, Janet?
Okay.
All
sure.
Right. Janet Bodner is with us, and she is the editor of Kiplinger's magazine, celebrating its 70th year in publication. They've created a list of 70 ways, one per year for that they've been in existence, 70 ways to build your wealth. We're going to jump into that and more after we take a break here on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Hi, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. I'm your overnight guy. It's 2 to 5 a.m., and we're here till 5. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text as well, 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is to like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Nick D Show. My guest right now is Janet Bodner, editor of Kiplinger's magazine that's celebrating its 70th year in publication. And it helps people learn about their finances and their future. And we welcome Janet back to the show. Hey, Janet.
Hey, how are you?
All right. Let's talk about how you guys put together the 70th anniversary special issue with 70 ways to build your wealth. And I know that this originally started out as a much larger list, right, Janet?
Yeah, first, this is funny because when we first thought, geez, you know, can we get 70 good tips? And so we put out the word to our staff that we wanted to do this cover story. We wanted to do it as a special issue for the April issue. And we said, you know, give us your suggestions. Well, we had almost 300 suggestions.
Oh.
From our staff members, and we actually had to cut them off. We said, no, we can't deal with it anymore. So we had to take that first list of 300 and cull it down to 70 that we thought were the best tips for the currently. You know, there are certain, and we did include, in fact, some what we call timeless tips that, of course, you know, have been good advice from, you know, since day one. But we tried to focus on things that were current today that people could use and take advantage of in order to build their wealth.
Well, what are some of the ones that you would like to touch on that we can get to? Just give us some of them.
Well, okay, the one I think we touched on this earlier, but I think it's really important. Number one is save early and often. And I think people just don't understand, the power of compounding and what small amounts of money can grow into. And the example that we use, which I think is a really powerful example, is that if you start saving at age 20 and you save for, say, 10 years, and then you stop saving. And let's just, you know, it doesn't matter what the amount of money is or the interest rate, but let's presume that you save regularly for those 10 years and then you stop. And then you consider another person who starts at age 30 and saves regularly the same amount of money, getting the same amount of interest for the next 30 plus years until retirement age, really. And you say to yourself, well, which one of those would have more money at the end? Well, this is a trick question. The answer is the person who started at age 20. Even though that person only saved for 10 years and then stopped versus the person who started at age 30 and saved every year for the next 30-some years, Again, same amount of money, same interest rate. The person who started earlier would end up with more money simply because they started earlier and had more years to compound. And I think that's a really eye-opening example for young people, young people in particular. But, you know, anybody to just it, once you start, even with, again, small amounts, as long as you save regularly, it can really build up over time. Plus, you build a discipline. And then as you get a little bit older and perhaps as you're earning more money, you can bump up the savings. So anyway, it's a very good piece of advice. I think it's really the foundational advice for any kind of personal financial planning.
Yeah, no, that is a great piece of advice. I also am looking at some of the ones that are on the list. I enjoy live below your means.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I think that's a good one.
And that's one of those timeless ones. And, you know, it's so hard to get people to actually do that because, you know, your first inclination, especially if you're working and if you're making more money over time, is, you know, you want to buy the bigger house, you want to buy the bigger car, you want to spend more money. And then you're always saying, oh, but, you know, I'm living paycheck to paycheck. If only I earned more money, I could start saving. Well, no, because what you're doing is you're bumping up your spending as you increase your your earnings incrementally.
Right.
So the real trick is not to buy the most expensive house in the neighborhood. And actually, this is coming into its own as a piece of advice now. But to buy a moderately priced house, say, in a comfortable neighborhood, a house that you are comfortable paying for so that you have, you're not house poor, as they say. You know, you do have other resources so that you can spend that money on other things. You can invest that money in other ways. You can spend that money in other ways to enhance your life. So you have more of a balance in your life. And again, that's living below your means. Don't spend every penny that comes in. Save some of the money first and then live on what you have left afterwards. And it's really a very self-disciplining thing without causing you too much pain, you know, because you're putting money aside first, you know you have that saved for the future, and then you can live on, you know, you have that self-discipline built in, and then you can take the rest of your money and do with it what you will.
You know, it's one of the things that for me personally, one of the tips on here is to vow to be debt-free. I went through a period of time where I was in major debt. And it was not good. And I have to say this, I finally got out of it, and there is nothing that feels better than when you're debt-free.
Really?
Seriously. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like the weight of the world just comes off of your shoulders. And then when I finally was completely debt-free, it was stunning. But to get to that place was just a lot of boneheaded moves on my part and credit cards and all that stupid stuff that people do when they're younger.
Mm-hmm. But you know what, your success story really is a success story, because a lot of people say, well, gee, I'm mired in this debt, or I can't really control my spending, or I really would like to invest for the future, but I don't have the money. But you know, you've done it, and lots of people have done it. You know, it really does take a little bit of self-discipline, maybe some help from the outside, if you have a system that you use, or if you have an outside advisor who helps you along. That sort of thing can be very helpful as well. But it is possible to get on top of this. But the easiest thing to do is not to get into the difficulties to begin with. And living below your means is one of the ways
that's,
of doing it.
That's just all. Not... That's what I've been doing. And that lesson
and probably,
was lesson was learned. Gonna, yeah, go ahead.
Yes, and you probably have a very fulfilling life, probably even more fulfilling, right? Living below your means, because as you said, the weight of the world has been lifted
absolutely
off your shoulders.
It feels great to be out of debt, and I know that it's a horrible thing when it happens. I want to touch on this quickly. You have a real passion for children's financial literacy. How soon should a child begin learning about finances, and what about like getting, you know, money, getting paid for chores and stuff like that?
Well, gosh, geez, I've written a whole book on that. But kids can start learning about money as soon as they start asking about money. You know, it's really important that they're going to notice what you're doing and what you're spending. You know, I mean, if you're going to the bank to get money out of the ATM machine, if you're using plastic to pay for things, they kind of notice all these things. And they start asking questions about it. And so I think it's sort of like talking about, you know, sex or any other, tough subject. Parents don't like to deal with money because they sometimes don't feel comfortable with it. But kids are just asking very basic questions about money. So it's very important to, explain things to them, to answer any questions they have, and especially because they don't always see money changing hands nowadays. So it's very important for them to get literally a feel for what money is. Getting an allowance, I think, is a very important teaching tool for children. And I think kids as young as 6, 7, 8 years old can have an actual allowance with real money, and real responsibilities that come along with that money. So maybe they have an interest in collecting something, as a lot of young kids do. The responsibility for buying those things can be theirs, and that's what they use their allowance for. And then as they get older, they use that allowance for other things. When they're high school kids, if they're still getting allowance, well, they may have a part-time job if they are in high school. In that case, they should be saving money for college, using some of their own money to buy their own clothing, certainly their own entertainment expenses. They shouldn't be coming to you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important for them to have money to manage. And I think that's one of the most important teaching tools for children. And another one is simply as going back to the adult thing, saving. You know, there are so many fun savings banks that you can get nowadays to teach kids the value of putting money aside, because once they have a certain amount of money saved, they can take it and use it for something bigger that they may want to spend money on or that they may want to buy. So I think that encouraging saving in that way is a very hands-on, very simple tool, and it teaches them a very important lesson.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And people can read more about it in Raising Money Smart Kids, which is one of your books.
Right.
And you also write the Money Smart Kids column that appears regularly on Kiplinger.com.
And that's right.
People can see that there, too. Really fun talking to you, and interesting and fascinating, Janet. Congratulations on the 70th anniversary of Kiplinger's as well.
Oh, my pleasure, and I'll pass that along to the Kiplinger family.
Outstanding. That was a lot of fun. Thank you, Janet.
Okay, thanks, Ted.
All right, take care. There you go. Janet Bodner, editor of Kiplinger's. You can check out Kiplinger.com. We just scratched the surface on the 70 ways to build your wealth. Really fascinating stuff, really good advice, and we have a link on our Facebook page to it, facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, we're going to take a quick break here on 720 WGN.